abhya socho dita anipatat natatta vidvan prakrito stitopi nibritta trishna svasukano bhutya
upon.
Cha.
Also.
Jantuhu.
The living entity. Kena api. By some force or other. Aso.
He.
Choditaha.
Impelled.
Anipatat.
Up to the point of death.
Na,
no.
Not.
Tatra.
There.
Vidvan.
A wise person. Prakritao.
In material nature.
Stitaha.
Situated.
Api.
Even though.
Nibritta.
Having given up.
Trishnaha,
material desire.
Tsva,
by his own.
Sukha,
of happiness.
Anubhutya,
experience.
An ordinary living entity performs material work and is transformed by the reaction to such work. Thus he is driven by various desires to continue working fruitively up to the very moment of his death. A wise person, however, having experienced his own constitutional bliss, gives up all material desires and does not engage in fruitive work.
Hmm.
Translation responsibly. An ordinary living entity.
An ordinary living entity.
Performs material work.
Performs material work.
And is transformed.
And is transformed.
By the reaction.
By the reaction.
To such work.
To such work.
Thus.
Thus.
He is driven.
He is driven.
By various desires.
By various desires.
To continue working fruitively.
To continue working fruitively.
Up to the very moment of his death.
A wise person.
However.
Having experienced
his own constitutional bliss.
Gives up all material desires.
And does not engage in fruitless work.
Purple.
By sexual association with women, a man is driven to enjoy the female form again and again, and indeed he remains lusty up to the moment of death. Similarly, through association with family and friends, the knot of material attachment becomes very tight. Thus, the reactions of fruitive work bind one more and more in the cycle of material defeat. But a learned person, one who is in touch with the Supreme Lord within his heart, realizes the ultimate frustration of material work and the danger of entering the womb of a pig or dog in a future life as a result of sinful activities. One on the platform of self-realization does not regard himself as an enjoyer of the world. Rather, he regards the entire cosmos as simply an insignificant expansion of the Lord's potency and himself as the Lord's humble servant. Text 31 doesn't have a purpose, so I'll read that as well. Tishtan tamasinam uttaprajantam sayanam ukshantam adantamanam sabhava manyat kimapi hammanam atmanam atmastav matirna veda. The wise man whose consciousness is fixed in himself does not even notice his own bodily activities. While standing, sitting, walking, lying down, urinating, eating, or performing other bodily functions, he understands that the body is acting according to its own nature. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshu Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langaya de gurin yat kripa tamaham bande sri kurum dinatarinam. So there's two types of people described in this verse. Who can tell me what they are? Yes. Yeah, that's a good... That's yep. What do we call those kinds of people? You have to speak loudly and clearly. Karmi and akarmi. Yep, karmi and akarmi. Or we would say karmi and a devotee. Probably. That's what I would say. Karmi and a devotee. Or in the translation, an ordinary living entity. An ordinary living entity. And a person who's wise. Two people. One in ignorance and one in knowledge. You know, Prabhupada says that there are two features of Vedic culture that are very important. That's knowledge and renunciation. And the whole purpose of the Veda is to promote knowledge and understanding, to give information. As Prabhupada says, we have to take knowledge from an authority, from the proper source. Otherwise, especially in a modern setting, you know, the knowledge is always changing. Prabhupada would criticize the modern system of acquiring knowledge through research. Because your knowledge is always changing. Of course, you say that it's always improving, but that means that the previous knowledge that you gave us was faulty. So who's to say that now the knowledge that you're giving us is also similarly not faulty? And Prabhupada makes the point that how are we going to receive information about subject matter that's beyond our sensual perception? How are we going to get information about things that are outside of our ken? How are we going to get that information? How will we get information about the nature of the soul when it is non-material? And we depend so much upon our senses, mind and senses, for acquiring information, but the mind and the senses are faulty. Although, according to the Vedic system, pratyaksha or direct perception is a valid form of gathering information, but because so much of the instruction in the Vedas deals with that which exists beyond the material world, its pratyaksha is limited. So, how to become a learned or a wise person? And Prabhupada gives the example that just as we go to university or we go to school and we submit to an authority and we learn from them and they test us, right? We go to an authorized school and we seek out, you know, in fact now the VCE students have now all received their results, right? And based on the results that they get, they then get offers from the universities, and they're all seeking out the best school. Or if you didn't do so well, accepting what you get, basically. But you know, one of the reasons why people work so hard in their study and in their examinations is so that they get an opportunity to go to the best school. And we presume that the best school means the best teachers. Produce the best result. So one has to accept an authority. So similarly also with spiritual learning, same principle applies. One has to seek out the authorized teacher in the authorized school, and then one has to submit. That's the beginning of spiritual life. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. One needs to have the right attitude, the right approach. Pranipatena pariprasnena, one should inquire. This is how we can tell if somebody is sincere, is by the method of their inquiry. If we're in doubt, We can always ask. And of course, service. Sevaya is like the exam. Right? We can test somebody's... We test their sincerity through their mode of inquiry. You know, when a person is very argumentative, then eventually you want to, you know, you can forget them, basically. And it's interesting. Here, it's mentioned, one who sees himself. And this is really the methodology for self-realization, is inquiring submissively, then accepting the instructions that one receives from the authority, from the authoritative sources, from the bona fide teachers, and then putting it into practice. And then by putting it into practice, one gets realization. Krishna mentions in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satata yukunam vajatam pritipurvakam tadame buddhi jogam tam jena mam upayanti te. He says that those who are constantly engaged in devotional service, I give them the understanding by which they come to me. And there's a famous story of the professor or learned person who went to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and wanted to ask some questions about spiritual life. And he was instructed to go and help the pujari clean the brass. And then after cleaning the brass, he didn't need to speak to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur anymore, because he said, I've understood the answers to the questions already. My questions have been answered. So, there's a very practical application of this system, in that if we want to understand spiritual topics, then one has to be prepared to follow the process. And then through direct perception, pratyakshavagamam dhamyam susukam katamavyayam, one realizes the self. That's the difference between the wise and the ignorant. The wise person follows the process, and the ignorant is either incapable or doesn't really desire to understand, is caught up so much in ignorance that they are not able to get out of the fruitive mode, the fruitive mentality. So, how to become wise? Usually, most people fit here. An ordinary living entity is described here. Chajantuhu. Most people are caught up in karma and the reactions of their work. That's what it says here. Karoti karma kriyate chajantuhu. Most people are caught up in work and the reactions to their work. And that's all they think about. In fact, they think if you're not working, then there's something wrong with you. They even criticize the devotees. Why aren't you working? Of course, the devotees are working, but they're not working for a material benefit, and that sometimes puzzles the materialistic persons. You know, Prabhupada was being criticized. He was in America, I can't remember exactly where, and the newspaper reporters were saying, you know, you just retire a life of chanting and dancing, and you shun material pursuits. Because Prabhupada said, well, if we're living such a good life, why don't you come and join us? But for a materialistic person, if they're not working, this is how caught up people are. This is how much the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance affects us. They're actually happy working hard, Right? There's happiness in the mode of goodness, happiness in the mode of passion, and happiness in the mode of ignorance. Happiness in the mode of passion is happy just working and working and working and working, even though they're not really getting anywhere. They're putting money in their bank account, but then it all comes out. Gas, electricity, rent, car registration, children's schooling, clothes, all the money's gone. Then they go out and work again. Put some money in the bank. Ah, great, I've got some money now. Then it all comes out again. But this is their happiness. But a devotee is not attracted to such pursuits. And you know, the enjoyment. Especially the mode of ignorance. Basically, if we look at the mode of ignorance is such that the activities it's just miserable in the beginning, miserable in the middle, and miserable in the end. This is the mode of ignorance. But there is happiness in, you know, you see it. 10 o'clock in the morning, you see people in the pub drinking. They already drank last night, but the first thing they do in the morning is have another drink. That keeps them going. Right? For anybody in the mode of goodness to see such behaviour, it's shocking. But for them, they can't start the day without a cigarette and a beer. I used to work with guys at the zoo. One fellow in particular, he ran on beer. He'd have to have a bottle of beer before he started work. For most of us, if we drank a bottle of beer before work, we wouldn't be able to stand up. But he needed the bottle of beer just to be able to stand up and keep going. So this is the mode of ignorance. And there's some happiness in that. They're happy. They actually feel happy. If they don't get their dose of ignorance to get started in the day, then they're miserable. Then there's happiness in the mode of passion, which is, you know, impelled, pushed by desire. Pushed. Same with the mode of ignorance. Impelled by desire, covered in a particular way, and the work then reacts. Same with the mode of passion. Characterized by unlimited desires for enjoying, possessing, creating. And you know, we see especially the culture that we live in. People think of our civilization as being very advanced because we can build big buildings and roads and flyovers and tunnels and trains and new motor cars, new gadgets and devices to make life easier. So-called easier actually just makes things more complicated and confusing. But so long as you have the latest gadget and the latest motor car, then you're experiencing some form of happiness influenced by the mode of passion. But the work required, the endeavour required to keep this up, it's inevitable that there's going to be some form of distress. Because, you know, the material, as we were discussing the other day, the material world is designed in such a way so that you can't be happy in it. That's how it's designed. It's designed to give you a minimal amount of happiness, but then take it away. And when I say minimal, probably minimal, minuscule. Minuscule happiness. Prabhupada gives the example of a dunking stool. Have you heard of the dunking stool? In medieval times, they had some fairly rudimentary forms of punishment. Right? If you misbehave, then they put you in the stocks, which is like, you know, they've got these wooden panels held up, right? And they've cut out where they put your hands and your legs. And you have to put your hands and legs in and they lock you in. And they keep you there for a few days. And the local people can come along with their rotten eggs and stuff and throw it at you. Give you some punishment. But one of the punishments is the dunking stool, where they strap you to a stool and then they dip you in the lake. It's on a long piece of long extended arm, and so then they dunk you in the lake, and then when you're just about to drown, then they pull you out so you can go and get some fresh air and think, oh great, that's good, but then back in again, back in the water. So that's what Prabhupada explains, and that Bhagavatam explains. This is material existence. We're struggling, we're drowning in the reactions to our material activities, impelled by the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. And what little enjoyment we get, it's like the breath of air that a person in a dunking stool experiences. In other words, the relief from the distress caused by our activities is our pleasure. And we're so conditioned by our activities, and somewhat influenced by the mode of ignorance, and so we're proud of our progress. So we're culture and society is proud of their achievements, and so as a result, they remain satisfied with this situation. Even though for the transcendentalist it's totally unsatisfying. A lot of hard work. And for what? Any material facility that we acquire or accumulate ultimately is taken away from us. So where's the benefit in the acquisition of material facility? Yet the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. Somebody giving class the other day. They were saying how, you know, the more the people who can absorb themselves and accumulate more of the qualities of ignorance, and they're praised by ignorant men. Right? I was Ramai Swami. Yeah. Those in the mode of passion, they see somebody who's got many motor cars, lots of money, lots of property, and they say, oh yeah, he's a good man, because he's accumulated more of the things that I've got, so therefore he's a good person. And that's the prominent feature in our society. The musicians and the entertainers are usually being followed by the press. And, you know, if they're able to keep out of rehab, then that's news, right? This star has just got out of rehabilitation with a drug problem or an alcohol problem or a whatever problem. And this is news. And people say, oh, yeah, look at that person. He's very successful. He's got a bad drug problem. So for people in the mode of ignorance, it's admirable. Or certainly they talk, you know, for those in the mode of goodness, or those, the transcendentalists, they wouldn't even talk about such things. It's considered low class. And for those very much absorbed in the mode of passion, we have, you know, there's the business publications, Forbes Weekly, Harvard Journal, and so forth. And in fact, in the modern day and age, it's very hard to find people who are influenced by the mode of goodness. Because, you know, happiness in the mode, there's also happiness in the mode of goodness. Although for a transcendentalist, even the happiness in the mode of goodness is still considered to be a temporary state, because the way the modes of material nature work, there's a competition. But very hard to find, in this day and age, in the Kali Yuga especially, you know, in the Kriti Yuga, people would, basically speaking, the quality of the personalities in the Kriti Yuga was Paramahamsas, and not less. Right? Which means that everybody understood that they're not the body, that they're spiritual by nature. They would sit and meditate for thousands of years. But this is the mode of goodness, pretty much. Or, beyond the mode of goodness, transcendental. Krishna mentioned previously in the Bhagavatam that there's happiness in degradation and intoxication is in the mode of ignorance. Happiness in sense gratification, the pursuit of material acquisition, is happiness in the mode of passion. Happiness in the self is in the mode of goodness. But usually that concept, that conception of self, is the Brahman conception. It's not a personal conception, it's an impersonal conception. And happiness in devotional service is transcendental, it's pure. So beyond the mode of ignorance, obviously, beyond the mode of passion, obviously, and beyond the mode of goodness. So in the Kali Yuga, we can see there's a degradation, because basically speaking, that, you know, the duration of life is diminished and people are much more influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, and so it's very hard to even find a manifestation of goodness. And so consequently, people working in very difficult circumstances, and there's very little cultivation of goodness, what to speak of transcendental or pure goodness. It's interesting, in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada talks about mercy, one of the purports, and compassion for others. And he mentions that if the wealthy people, this is Prabhupada's cure for this problem, the wealthy people would give 50% of their wealth for educating people in the principles of the Bhagavatam, then he says we can re-establish some of the culture that existed in the Kriti Yuga, in Satya Yuga. Because people are influenced very much by the mode of ignorance in the Kali Yuga, and they're proud of their achievements. I think, yes, we're making so much advancement. In fact, they think we're the most advanced. And next year we'll be, you know, now it's the new, we're now in the new year. So people know, oh, yeah, now that this year we're going to make progress. Huh? They're thinking that they're making progress, and that the coming year is going to be another year of progress. But according to the transcendentalists, it was another year of degradation, and that actually we're going backwards. But in reality, that's what's happening. People are not coming any closer to a clear understanding of their identity. They're confused. We may have a faster computer chip. So what? There won't be a faster processor than the brain that we've already got. And that that processing power, if you like, coupled with intelligence, with the ability to discriminate. You know, the human form is actually, when you think about it, is such an already finely tuned machine. It's just being used for the wrong purpose. Kami's caught up in, well, we don't see the mode of goodness, practically speaking, so caught up in the mode of ignorance and passion. Just get the reactions of their work, and so consequently remain in ignorance. Whereas a learned person, and a learned person is not something that just happens, it's deliberate. But a learned person who is able to understand the foolishness of material existence and the implications of working in the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, and who wants to avoid the results, learns to work in a way that is detached from the material results. This is really Krishna's instruction very early in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. One should work, na kadachana. One shouldn't be attached to the results of one's works. What's that verse? Is it phaleshu? Kamana. Yes, what's it? Yeah. Say it slowly and clearly. Ma phalechu kadachana. Never at any time be attached to the results of your work, but do it out of a sense of duty, offering the results to Krishna. And you know, this is very much based on the prime or the principle, the main principle understanding of Krishna consciousness, which is mentioned in this next verse. Why shouldn't we be attached to the results of our work? Who can say? Why shouldn't we be attached to the results of our work? Makes us proud. Yeah, well, it's a result of pride. Yeah. Yeah, we're thinking we're the doers. But we're not the doers. We're just a tiny little spirit soul. That's real knowledge. And that's why humility is a characteristic of knowledge. Because the person who's in knowledge understands, I'm nothing. My intelligence, my prowess, my whatever potency, whatever little potency I might have, ultimately that's all coming from Krishna. I'm just a little spirit soul who thinks he's the doer, but isn't. That's pride. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani savasaha ahankaram vimudhatma kartahamindi manyate. Is that right? Mudhatma, right? What does mudhatma mean? Mudha means fool. Right? So the fool is thinking, I'm the doer. One who's in knowledge understands, I'm not the doer. This is this pride. So people need to be educated. So Prabhupada's solution is to teach the Bhagavat philosophy. He said this is the Bhagavatam should be taught. 50% of people's wealth, this is mercy or compassion, right? Is to relieve people from their suffering, relieve others from their suffering. So Prabhupada's recommendation is 50% of people's wealth should be used to educate people in the principles of spiritual life. And so, you know, that's the reason why he founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is to educate people in the principles of spiritual life. And of course that means teaching the Bhagavatam, so that people can be elevated. In this day and age, everybody pretty much influenced by the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. So it's not easy. actually to educate. It's not like people are lining up and saying, yes, sign me up for the Science of Self-Realization course. They're not. They're thinking, no, we're already the most advanced. We're already making progress. Only, what was the AC/DC song? Highway to Hell. We're on the highway to hell. That's the only advancement that we're making. As it mentions here, a wise person, having experienced his own constitutional position, and as a consequence, the happiness that comes from that, Susukam pratyak savagamam dharmam. Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. This knowledge is the king of education, but it is the most confidential, or it's secret. So in other words, in one sense, this knowledge is a secret, but it's available and we're widely distributing it, but it is not accessible to everybody. When one tastes the when one experiences and tastes one's spiritual identity, then one experiences the what do we call it? The bliss. Right? Anandam buddhivadanam pratipadam punam ritasvaradanam. Complete nectar. Right? Param vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. We glorify the chanting of Hare Krishna. Why? Because the chanting of Hare Krishna gives us direct connection to the self. It's such a simple process of yoga. Right? Chanting Hare Krishna is such a simple process. Sankirtanam. It's one of the five angas of bhakti, which have such potency that even if you don't have faith in them, they still work. And it's not unusual for us to be on a Harinam these days in the city. And, you know, there's on a Friday night, there's usually people travelling and walking around. It's not unusual these days, two or three times in a night, to see people running 30 metres just to come and join in with the Sankirtan party. Right? People will run. Who went on Harinam last night? Anybody here went on Harinam last night? Were people running to join the devotees? Yeah, actually it's Vyasaki Prabhu said to me after he went out, he wasn't very enthusiastic to go out on Harinam. But then after he went out, he said, what have you done to the people in Melbourne? I just want to run and jump into the kirtan party. You know, 20 or 30 years ago, people used to come and run and want to punch us. You know, they'd come in drunk and then throw their arms around and try to get into a fight. But these days, people run and jump into the kirtan, they just want to dance with the devotees. So, you know, without knowing it, people are getting affected by this transcendental process. They're not practitioners, if you like, they're not sadhakas. But the chanting of Hare Krishna, the Sankirtan, has such potency that you don't have to be a sadhaka, and you can still get a connection. So it's a pratyak savagamam dharmyam. The perfection of religion is that it should reveal by direct perception an understanding of one's spiritual identity. And of course, one of the understandings or one of the realizations that one gets when one connects to one's spiritual identity is one feels the amrita. What's amrita literally mean? What does it mean? Nectar, yes, nectar. But amrita means what? No death. Right? No death. So one realizes one's transcendental position. I don't have to die. Yoo-hoo! Amritas. Yeah. So, Prabhupada's recommendation, let's teach the world the principles of the Bhagavat philosophy so that they can taste this nectar always, because people will, by following by becoming sadhikas, they will be able to taste that nectar all of the time. And so we get this verse after this. The wise man whose consciousness is fixed in the self does not even notice his own bodily activities. But when we're on this platform, then we can understand we're on a, you know, pretty much on a Paramahamsa platform. While standing, sitting, walking, lying down, urinating, eating or performing other bodily functions, he understands that the body is acting according to its own nature. So transcendental. Transcendentalist. And of course, because people aren't seeking, because in the Kali Yuga people are degraded, they already think we're already more advanced than we've ever been. It's hard to actually, you know, bring them to the point of self-realization. So therefore Lord Chaitanya has established the Sankirtan. He's like a salesman who has to go out and distribute his wares to give people a sample. Especially through the chanting of Hare Krishna, we see it. Going out on Sankirtan, chanting Hare Krishna in public is, well, for some people it's very challenging. Because, you know, here we are, we have to make a public display of ourselves. And it's like, for me, that was one of the most horrific thoughts. Right? Go out and chant Hare Krishna in public. No, do I have to do that? How embarrassing. What happens if my friends see me? What happens if my boss sees me? My workers, my co-workers. Right? I said at Chandanishwar the other day, how's your job going? He says, alright. I says, you're not wearing tilak to work? Not yet. So, you know, we don't want to be caught downtown chanting Hare Krishna by the boss. But that's the way that for the devotees who partake in that activity, though, actually it's the most blissful. That's why the devotees are dancing and singing and experiencing ecstasy, and it's a means by which Lord Chaitanya gives out samples to people, and you can see it. People hear the Harinam, they see the enthusiasm of the devotees, and they want to jump in and participate. Well, they feel it. They feel the potency of the Maha Mantra and the potency of the Sankirtan, and as we've mentioned previously, it's imperceptibly changing the culture. As I say, you know, 30 years ago, the first time I went on Harinam, my greatest fears were realized immediately. These heavy thugs came down the street. First one punched Jammy Jaya, then Creeper Car up, smashed him in the gutter. I was next. Uh-oh. For some reason the guy didn't hit me. And then fortunately the police were there, so, you know, we were protected by the South Australian police. That's interesting in and of itself. And yet we see today, you know, it's very rare to find a person who's not, at least in Melbourne, it's very rare to find a person who's not smiling, or at least in some form appreciating, even people come along and chant with you, or you know, there's the Harinam baby, the family that always sees the devotees. And 2 weeks ago they gave the baby to Kanapati, so Kanapati's holding the Harinam baby. And they've got the camera out taking a picture of Kanapati holding the Harinam baby. And the grandma said to me, did I mention this the other day? The grandma said to me, she said, oh, she's so happy with him. She sees him every week. And then there was the other two girls the night we went out with Dina Bundu. Was it Dina Bundu? Yeah, Dina Bundu. And there were these two girls, they wouldn't have been more than 3 and a half, close to 4. And as soon as they saw the Sankirtan party and the girls dancing, they just ran away from their mothers and joined the girls. It's just like, hi, Hari Bol, we've been waiting for you. And then, you know, we were at around about just before DJ's on the side of the street going down towards Roger David's. And is that the name of that place? Yeah. And once we got past DJ's, you know, the mum said, okay, come now. You know, and the girls just waved to their mum and said, oh, we're going with a second time party. So that's Lord Chaitanya's, you know, sampler, if you like. And it's gradually, the Sankirtan and the Prasadam distribution and the book distribution, all these activities are giving people an opportunity to connect to that amrit, to that nectar, to that bliss, the bliss portion. And gradually attract, just like we were attracted to the chanting of Hare Krishna, or attracted to the prasadam, or attracted to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This agyata sukriti, it's work. It's like the karmis are working. The devotees are also working, but their working is on the transcendental platform without reactions. And so the devotees go out, book distribution, prasadam distribution, Harinam, Sankirtan. They go out to engage people in activities that have no material reactions. They only have spiritual reactions. And as a result of that engagement, because it's amrita or nectar, it's very attractive. And because it's amrita on the transcendental platform, it's also pavitram idam uttamam. It's purifying. Pavitra means pure. Raja vidya raja guyam. Pavitram idam uttamam. So it's above ignorance. And basically, existence in the material world is ignorance. Whether it's goodness, passion, or ignorance, if there's still a connection or an identification with this body and the mind and the senses, then that basically is under the mode of ignorance, under the mode of ahankara or false ego. But when one's engaged in devotional activities, pavitram idam uttamam, pratyaksavagamam damyam, the perfection is that it gives direct perception of the self. Even unknowingly, this is what's called agyata sukriti. For the gradual purification, for the gradual, you know, it's canvassing, it's like going out and selling your wares, but giving samples away. And that's Lord Chaitanya's mission. He's liberally giving samples, liberally giving. That's why Lord Chaitanya is called Mahavadanyaya, Namo Mahavadanyaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate. He's just giving away Krishna Prema, just handing it out freely. Even people are not qualified. Otherwise, how do we get here? When you think about it, how many of us were you know, on the Paramahamsa platform before we became met the devotees. How many of us are on the Paramahamsa platform now? Aspiring, right? We're aspiring Paramahamsas. And what did Advaita Acharya say to Lord Nityananda? You're a reject Paramahamsa. Of course, they were joking. Of course. Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya came to Advaita Acharya's house to have some prasadam. And Advaita Acharya had cooked a feast, you know, for about 50 people. Lord Nityananda said, I came here to break my fast, and I actually didn't get anything to eat. You just gave me a few grains of rice. So they would tease each other. So Lord Chaitanya is freely distributing Namo Mahabhadanyaya, most magnanimous, giving everybody an opportunity, giving us an opportunity to make progress ourselves on this platform of devotional service as opposed to the karma, the karmis, if you like. Be engaged in devotional service. And so, you know, our process, Prabhupada says, our process is basically to look at the qualities, to look at our qualities, to look at our characteristics, to look at what we're capable of doing, and then engage those propensities in such a way so that the actions that we perform will not give us reactions. So we look at the qualities and the characteristics of the individual, and then we take those natural propensities and we engage them in action, karma, which is connected to Krishna. As much as possible, try to karma namana sagira, our actions, our thoughts, our words, in fact everything we do. Iha yasya hare dasye kamana manasa gira nikilas vapyavastha so jivan mukta sa uchate. In that way we become liberated, because our activities are no longer based on the material. And this is a wise person. They give up attachment to the result and they dedicate all of their activities to serving Krishna. By engaging in that kind of work, one becomes detached from the results of the work. One comes to the point of self-realization. So, as Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam jainamamu payante. I give them the understanding by which they come to me. And especially inherent within that is this, instead of thinking, oh, I'm the doer and this is my result. This is one of the reasons why Prabhupada encouraged, give 50% of your wealth to preaching. Which is not easy, you know, if everybody was to do that, we would certainly have enough money to do all of the things we wanted to do to preach and establish Krishna consciousness. But it would mean that all of us would be on a very highly elevated platform of devotional service. And naturally we'd be thinking of Krishna. You know, they say a man thinks of where he puts his money. So usually we're thinking of either NAB, Westpac, Commonwealth Bank, or whatever. That's where we're thinking. You know? But if we're giving our money to Krishna and dedicating our activities to Krishna, then we'd be very Krishna conscious. So there's that detachment. Let me give everything. Ultimately, it doesn't. And that's knowledge. Ultimately, it's not mine and it's not me. It's Krishna. What is it? Idam Krishnaya, idam na mama. This is for Krishna. It is not for me. That's the mood. And that's what differentiates these two types of people. There's the materialistic person who thinks, I'm the doer, it's me, we're making progress, even though it's obvious that he's not. Whereas the transcendentalist says, it's not me, it's Krishna's, let me do it for Krishna. Then he's actually making progress because he realizes, I'm not the body. Actually comes to the level of understanding, spiritual understanding. And this kind of understanding was the real education that Prabhupada says will be the cure for solving the world's problems. Because it means people will change the way they work, the purpose of their work, the results of their work. They'll be elevated to the mode of goodness, or better than that, to the realm, to the transcendental, pure goodness. Yeah, answer. One on the platform of self-realization does not regard himself as an enjoyer of the world. Rather, he regards the entire cosmos as simply an insignificant expansion of the Lord's potency, and himself as the Lord's humble servant. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes. Yeah. They work hard. So
what we should do is not misunderstand their behavior.
Well, there's not a lot of difference. If you look at a devotee and you look at a kami, you can't see a lot of difference. One goes to the bank, the other one goes to the bank. Right? Makes money, puts money in the bank, spends money, looking for a good deal, bargains even. Might even get in an argument with somebody. Right? Prabhupada was always concerned about saving money. There's that story of the devotees got a pandal set up in Juhu, and I think, you know, the contractor charged him 30,000 rupees when Prabhupada found out about it. He's really angry. He gave the contractor 5,000 rupees and told him to go away. And he went away and he was happy with the 5,000 rupees, but these, you know, the Prabhupada's disciples had negotiated for 30,000 rupees. They thought they were getting a good deal. So, you know, see, Prabhupada, you know, what's the difference between Prabhupada and an ordinary businessman? Just wrangling a good deal. So how do we see the difference? The difference is that a devotee will always be glorifying Krishna, will be attached to chanting Hare Krishna and to spreading Krishna consciousness in one way or another. And so that's the difference between a materialist and a devotee. A devotee may work as hard or even sometimes harder. I know, you know, before I became a devotee, I didn't have any enthusiasm to work for anyone. I wasn't, you know, getting a job and working for a boss was like, phew, what do you want to do that for? Work hard like an ass and you're still unhappy. Right? That's how I figured life was. Work hard, and they make the money. They give you a pittance, and then you've still got to go and work hard. Better not do anything. Of course, you know, I could just go down the dole office and hand in my form and get my check every week. If I didn't have any access to funds, and I probably might have thought differently. But we're living in a lucky country, so you, in a lucky country in those days, you didn't have to do anything, but you still got paid to do it. You get paid to do nothing. But then when I met the devotees and discovered Krishna consciousness, then, you know, actually it was a bit of a shock for me that on Sundays you didn't sleep in and do nothing. You had to get up. In fact, Sundays was the day you worked the hardest, because that's when you had to cook the Sunday feast. And Kormi used to round up all the brahmacharis, which is about five or six of us, and that was it. You were then trapped in the kitchen all day. So I came from a culture of, you know, sleeping in all day to working all day on a Sunday. I was like, what's wrong? What's wrong with you guys? This is not what you do on a Sunday. But then after a while I learned that Sunday was one of the best days of the week. You worked hard, but it was still enjoyable. So working for Krishna became fun and something to enjoy. Just naturally you enjoy it. So you don't even notice that you're working hard. Right? So how do we tell the difference between a materialistic person and a devotee? The devotee is happy to work for Krishna's pleasure and does so with enthusiasm, and is detached, right here, detached from the result. He's not he's attached to the result, but for Krishna's pleasure, right? Not for his own benefit. And of course, in this day and age, the devotees work for the benefit of others by creating an environment, creating a situation so that they can fulfill Lord Chaitanya's mission, which is basically to liberally distribute Krishna consciousness to everybody. The activity may be the same, but the motivation is different. So you have to look at the motivation. Right? And that requires a little bit of intelligence. That requires a little bit of introspection to be able to see what is the motivation of this person. He's working hard, he's still even driving around in a Mercedes Benz. So he looks like a materialist, but what's his motivation? You can see he gives money, he gives time, or he gives all of his time and all of his money, if you like, to giving other people an opportunity to come to Krishna. He's always thinking of ways to bring people to Krishna. Any other comments, questions? It is amazing. Any other comments or questions? Is that okay, Sriman? You have to. Because we have to be careful about working in the material world, if you like. Prabhupada says you have to learn the art of catching a big fish without getting wet. Right, so it is very easy to get caught up in the same activities and then get affected by them. Right, so a devotee has to learn the art of working in the material world but not being in the material world. And in material consciousness, that's a challenge. And it's why, you know, for the household of ashram especially is considered a dangerous place, because it's easy for a transcendentalist to get gobbled up in material life. Huh? Anybody experienced that? Don't all put your hands up at once. Huh? To be a transcendentalist and to have to work in the material world is tricky stuff. Alright. Kanta Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Mahaprasadam ki jai.